I am going to be speaking today about the questions that have come in regard to Revelation chapter 12 and 13. And so it'll take our time this morning to talk about the questions about Revelation 12. There are several, and here is the first one that I will share with you. It says, I'm a little confused about the timing between the dragon wanting to consume the child of Revelation chapter 12, and then they talk about the war in heaven, and Satan and a third of his angels is cast down to the earth. Is Satan trying to consume Christ at his birth, and then they flash back to the war in heaven? We're going to see in the Bible that there was a time where Satan actually had access to heaven, okay? And there was a time where there's even another scripture that comes to mind as I'm saying this right now. But then there was a time where Satan was cast out and had no more access to heaven. When was that, and how do we show it from the Bible? So now, was there a war in heaven before Christ even created the earth? Before he created Adam and Eve? Yes, there was. Is that being described in Revelation 12? That's the question. So I'm going to look for a moment at some of the comments that I've got written here. Job 1, verses 6 through 7. Now, there was a day when the sons of God, which we know to be the angels, right? The sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also. And so the holy angels are there, but Satan is also there. He came among them, kind of like the little horn. He was among the other horns. And the Lord said unto Satan, why did you come? Whence comest thou? Where'd you come from? Then Satan answered and said, well, I came from going to and fro in the earth and from walking up and down in it. And so according to this verse, there was an actual interaction between God and Satan. And God and Satan were able to interact between each other, dealing specifically in one of the councils, not the councils that were between them both. That's something different. That's the plan of salvation the Father and the Son made up alone. But Satan always wanted to be in those councils. And so when the sons of God and the Father and Son had come together, that's when Satan wanted to come in and be part of that council. Well, he was already cast out at that point. And so what he does is he shows up and he starts asking, or rather not asking questions, but he starts making comments of where he was because he was asked that question. So it says here in our next verse, 2 Chronicles chapter 18, verses 18 through 22, again he said, this is, Micaiah is speaking to Jehoshaphat and one of the other kings. I don't remember. I think it was Ahab. I don't recall, but you can look. Maybe you can help me by putting in the notes or just speaking up real quick what king that was. But again, he said, therefore, hear the word of the Lord. I saw the Lord sitting upon his throne. Okay, so that's what Micaiah is seeing. All the host of heaven was standing on his right hand and on his left. So he's surrounded by the host of heaven, which are, of course, the angels. And the Lord said, who shall entice Ahab? Who shall entice Ahab, king of Israel, that he may go up and fall at Ramoth-Gilead? And one spake, one what? One of the host of heaven. One spake and said after this manner, and another after this manner. Then there came out a spirit and stood before the Lord and said, I will entice him. And the Lord said unto him, wherewith? How are you going to entice him? He says, I will go out and be a lying spirit in the mouth of all his prophets. And the Lord said, well, okay, thou shalt entice him, and thou shalt also prevail. Go out and do even so. Now therefore, behold, the Lord hath put a lying spirit in the mouth of these thy prophets, and the Lord hath spoken evil against thee. Now don't be surprised by this if you've never seen it before, But this verse seems to indicate that what we have described is that the Lord sent out an evil spirit to deceive people. Well, understand it in the context of Job chapter 1. Job was shown that the holy angels and Satan was there, and they were all in a council together, and they were interacting with one another. So what happened is there was this activity there in heaven where Satan was there, the Lord was there, and Satan gives a report of what he was doing. It's kind of similar in this Second Chronicles scenario where it says in the Bible in Second Chronicles that Satan was there also amidst those that were in heaven in this council. And so what goes on in that story is that the angels were saying something and another angel was saying something. Finally, one of the evil angels in those kind of councils came up and said, I can do something. It might have been Satan himself, I don't know, but it just says one of the angels. And so when it says that the evil spirit was sent from the Lord, it was because God allowed it. Now, God could have stopped it and said, no, you're not going to go. But because God allowed that spirit to go and entice those evil, well, the unrighteous prophets and the unwilling to submit to God's will prophets, because God was willing to allow that spirit to go, it happened that God then sent that spirit. So don't get confused with that wording, because it does come up a few times in the Bible. Like, for example, when David was counting the people in the nation of Israel, it says that God sent an evil spirit upon, was that David? I think so, in Samuel. I remember the book, I just don't remember exactly the story. But that's when, of course, Satan was able to be sent by the Lord. And it's because the Lord allowed it. See, if the Lord withdraws himself from a situation, the only other option is that Satan fills that void. There's no blank spots in the universe. As far as humans are concerned and as far as activities, you're either with God or you're not. And so those that are with God have his spirit. Those that are not with God do not have his spirit. You don't have a void of the spirit of God or the spirit of Satan. And so that's the context that I understand that situation to be in. Now, there was another section that I wanted to show you real quick. It's in the book of Zechariah chapter 3. He showed me Joshua the high priest. He was standing before the angel of the Lord, and Satan was standing at his right hand to resist him. Now that word resist actually means accuse. And so the Lord said unto Satan, the Lord rebuke thee, O Satan, even the Lord that has chosen Jerusalem rebuke thee. Is not this a brand plucked out of the fire? And so we have the same interaction with Lucifer or Satan being in heaven before the Lord, and they're interacting, you see. And so this whole scenario of Satan having opportunity to be in heaven is only found in the Old Testament. That's really interesting, because what we can see according to the Bible in Revelation chapter 12, verse 7 and onward, there was war in heaven. Now, when was there war in heaven? Remember, it says that the woman brought forth a man-child. He was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up unto God. So this child, which was Jesus, the man-child, he's going to rule all nations. There was a question about that that we'll deal with later. And that child, Jesus, was caught up unto God and to his throne. And so this the woman, who was the one that gave forth that child, she ran into the wilderness. She was there for 1,260 days. But then, right immediately afterwards, it says, and there was war in heaven. Now, if you were just to read in the context, you would find that after the man ascends to heaven, being caught up to God and to his throne, after the woman is talked about being in the wilderness, then there was war in heaven. Well, guess what? That's exactly what it's describing. Michael, this is another name for Christ. Now, the scenario of Michael being Christ does not mean that Christ was created. Michael means Lord, the one who is like God. And of course, the one who is like God is the one that was brought forth in the express image of God's person. You can read that in Hebrews chapter 1, verse 2 and 3. And so the one who is like God is also the Lord of hosts. And so Michael, when he comes in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 16 and onward, when he comes with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, with the trumpet of God, we know that it's Christ. He's the one that speaks. And we also know that in the book of Jude, the Lord rebuke thee. It was Michael that said that. And we also know that it was the angel of the Lord in Zechariah 3 that we just talked about. So there's no question, Michael is simply another name for Jesus, but that does not mean Jesus was created. Jesus was begotten. That there is a difference. So let's continue in this section here in Revelation chapter 12. Michael, that's Christ, and his angels, because they used to commune together and used to meet together, they fought against the dragon. And the dragon fought with his angels, but the dragon did not prevail. Neither was their place found any more in heaven. You see, they did have a place in heaven during the times that we read about, where we talked about in Job, in Chronicles, it's also in Kings, but also in Zechariah. In the Old Testament, the devil and his angels were there in heaven having, conversations. They were having committees, if you will, to see how it is that they're able to do ministry, evil ministry, that is, and how the good angels are able to do good ministry. And so only things that God allows is what occurs to us. Now, so what we can see in this further story is they didn't have a place anymore in heaven. The great dragon was cast out. He no more had a place in heaven where he could be in those councils. He was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan. What does he do? He deceives the whole world. He was cast out to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. Now notice the context. We're still not finished. Verse 10. I heard with a loud voice saying in heaven, now is come salvation. When, what do you mean now? Well, when Michael, the child, Jesus, was caught up to God and he was able to sit upon his throne, when Satan was finally vanquished from heaven, he no longer had an opportunity to be there. It says in verse 10, now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God. Why? Because the throne was given to the Son. And the Father who gave the throne to his Son, his kingdom is sure. Why is it sure? Because he, God, did not lie. He showed the truth through his Son that a human could live in the kingdom of the enemy without submitting to his kingdom authority. God was able to sustain his Son by his own spirit and the power of his Christ. Okay? So it's the kingdom of God the Father and it's the power of his Christ. What is the Christ but the anointed one? Why is it now salvation has come? Because the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which, like we read in Zechariah chapter 3, accused them before our God day and night. But there's no way anymore that Satan has opportunity to do that. Satan has been cast out. When was he cast out? When Christ gained victory over the kingdom of Satan, showing the kingdom of God is true, your kingdom is false. Now is come salvation and strength, and Satan no more has the ability to accuse people before heaven. That's, of course, now. What's going on in the earth is Satan is very angry. He knows he has but a short time, and he's doing everything he can to destroy that woman that ran into the wilderness. Finally, at the end of time, where it says in verse 17 that that woman has seed or children, and the enemy is really angry with those children that have the commandments of God and the testimony of Jesus. And so it's, and the more I've studied the angels, frankly, the more I understand the testimony of Jesus, the spirit of prophecy. And so I believe that the angelic ministry is definitely a major part of the last movement, having the commandments of God and the testimony of Jesus, which includes the ministration of the angels. You can even read that in Revelation chapter 1, verse 1. So what we have there is at the cross is when that war occurred. Now, does that war look similar to the first war that occurred when Satan was cast out, before man was created? Absolutely. I believe it was. I believe it was very similar. but I don't think we can take that section of Revelation, pull it aside, and throw it over there, except as an example of what happened back there, not in the time frame. Let's go ahead and look at our next question. Here is my questions about Revelation 12, okay? In Revelation 12, 5, what does it mean that Jesus is to rule all nations with a rod of iron? This is not how I usually think of him ruling. You know, that's a good point. I mean, I think of Jesus ruling on his throne with a scepter of righteousness. I don't see a scepter of iron where he's going to, you know, beat people down. The iron generally refers to Babylonian rule. You can see that in the book of Daniel. You can see that in the book of Jeremiah, in the book of Isaiah, probably in Ezekiel as well. And so you wonder about this rod of iron. Like, is that how Christ is going to rule all nations? Excuse me, all nations? So what I did is I found a few verses. I had never asked the question before, so this is new to me, and I feel as though I understand a little bit about it, but I can't say I understand all the details, having studied it for years, and I won't understand all the details until I'm able to ask Christ personally, like, what did you mean? I used to say that when I'm in heaven, I would ask God to recreate my Bible. And then, because I've only had two Bibles as a Christian, one is here, and this is my second Bible. I have only had two, and I absolutely love my Bible. The first one was a gift from my mother, and this one I purchased on my own. So I've only had two Bibles that I've really used in my 24 years of Christian experience, and the idea of going to a new Bible is absolutely foreign to me. I don't want to do that at all. In fact, this one fell off the back of my car. It was on the trunk, or the top. I had set it on the top. After visiting a family as a pastor, we were together as a family at their home. And when I took off, it stayed on there until the first corner. Well, that first corner, I was doing about 45 or 50 miles an hour. So this Bible flew off the edge, and there's a bunch of tears in it, and a lot of pages are kind of chewed up. But that's part of the character of this Bible. I love it. Anyways, I used to say that when I get to heaven, I'm going to ask God to recreate my Bible and then start at the very beginning. In the beginning, what does that mean, you know? And so God's going to take however long, it doesn't matter. He's going to explain to me what it means. And then finally, okay, after he explains, in the beginning, God, what does that mean? And so he's going to explain that part. In the beginning, God created. What does that mean? You know, I'm going to go through all the portions of the Bible and try to just learn all the things that I absolutely missed in all the time I've studied, because, you know, we are so basic as humans. We don't understand. There are some things we get because of experience and whatever. We have some wisdom, but not like God does, not like his son. And so I really look forward to learning from him. Anyways, this idea of him ruling with a rod of iron, I've got a couple of thoughts, and so I'll share them with you. It's Revelation 12, 5. We're going to go ahead and read that real quick. It says, and she, that's the woman, brought forth a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, and caught up unto God and to his throne. So the idea of ruling with a rod of iron is what the question is about. Let's go ahead and read that real quick. It says in Psalm 2, verse 9. This is actually the verse that the book of Revelation was quoting, because remember, the book of Revelation's foundation is the Old Testament. Thou shalt break them with a rod of iron. Notice what it says, break them. Thou shalt dash them to pieces like a potter's vessel. So the whole idea of having a rod of iron is to break them, okay? It's to dash them to pieces. And so in Revelation 2, when it says in verse 27, he shall rule them with a rod of iron, as the vessels of a potter shall they be broken to shiver. So this whole idea of ruling with a rod is to break them, okay? So it's dealing with the context of judgment. So we have this judge here that's going to dash them to pieces like a potter's vessel. Same thing as one of the promises in one of the churches. Christ is going to rule them and they will be broken, right? And even, well, it's actually not Christ that's going to do it. It's the promise that the people will do that and they will be broken to pieces, even as I have received of my Father. What did he receive of his Father? The ability to rule them with a rod of iron and to break into pieces. And so is there a connection with this idea that Christ is going to be coming to judge and break in pieces? Is there a connection with Daniel chapter 2, verse 44? In the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it, the kingdom, and the ruler on that throne shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. And so the whole idea of being brought forth and to rule all nations with a rod of iron seems to me as though it's reflecting the kingdom rule and the judgment that's coming. Because remember in Revelation 19, verse 15, it says when he's coming, out of his mouth goes a sharp sword. And with that sword, which could very well be iron, a rod of iron, the sharp sword, what will he do? He will smite the nations. And he will rule them with that rod of iron, his word. He will judge them. And he treadeth the winepress of the fierceness and wrath of Almighty God. So how does he do this? Of course, he does it with his feet. He treads out the winepress with his feet. The above, it's God's response to a physical and spiritual kingdom of this world. So God is going to send his son in response to judge the world because of the Babylonian rule. Notice what happens with this Babylonian rule. After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, there was a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, strong exceedingly. And it had great iron teeth, kind of like an iron rod. What did he do with those iron teeth? He broke in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. Verse 19 of that same chapter. Then I would know the truth of the fourth beast, which was diverse from all the others. He was exceeding dreadful. His teeth were of iron, kind of like a rod of iron, and his nails were of brass, which devoured, break in pieces, and stamped the residue with his feet. Now, recall for just a moment in the book of Revelation chapter 18, and I'm going to guess it's verse 6 or so. Reward her even as she rewarded you, and double unto her, double according to her works. In the cup she hath filled, fill to her double. So I would think that this section here, Revelation 18:6, ought to be put right after this section, which is dealing specifically with the idea that they were able to receive according as they had done. Because Babylon, this fourth beast, it had iron and it brake. And the same thing that Christ is going to do with the rod of iron, he's going to break. Is that helpful? Does that make sense to you? Because like I said, I don't have all the answers, but it seems like it makes a lot of sense to me. Maybe I can share the next section of questions here. In Revelation 12, verse 11, the question comes, how do we overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony? I've always thought that our testimony should be overcoming, but have never really thought of how we overcome by our testimony. Really good question. And so I want to ask just, not ask really, but just kind of direct for a moment. In these situations where you don't understand a setting, it's really good to try to understand the context. And it sounds so simple. I know that we as Bible students, we always look at the context, but in this setting, had the questioner asked the context, it would have just made probably sense right away. But I'll show you what I mean. But and then we'll, of course, go into further comments on this. Revelation 12, verse 10. So this is the previous verse, because the one that we're asking about is 11. I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now has come salvation and strength in the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ. Why? For the accuser of our brethren is cast down. Ah, so he accuses us. He accused them before our God day and night, and they overcame him. How? They overcame the accusations because of the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. So this is a judgment scenario. We have the accuser of the brethren. Christ is now ruling with his Father in the kingdom of his God, and we have an accuser there. So we have the kingdom of God and of Christ. Those are the judges, if you will. Christ has been committed specifically the judgment accusation, as you can read in John chapter 6. Well, the accuser is there, and he can't do it anymore in heaven, but he's certainly doing it on earth. And what is he bringing up? Well, our records. Our records can either be covered by the blood of the Lamb, or the word of our testimony, which includes our actions. And they didn't love their lives, even unto the death. So some of these people gave their lives because of their faith in the Father and His Son. And so in this judgment scenario, it seems to me that we have the description of Satan trying to accuse, but people being able to overcome by the blood and their actions. Now, what do I mean by their actions? Let's look a little further into that section, because in Zechariah 3, verses 1 through 7, just as we had read earlier, I'm going to read it a little bit more here, and we're going to try to understand a little more in depth. He, that's the angel, showed me Joshua the high priest standing before the angel of the Lord. And Satan was there resisting, Satan standing at his right hand to resist him. Now that word, as I said earlier, is accuse in the Hebrew. So Satan, what is he doing? He's accusing them, just as he had done before. He accuses them day and night in Revelation chapter 12. Well, so this is what's happening. He's standing before the angel of the Lord, which is Jesus Christ or Michael, and he is resisting or accusing them. This showed me Joshua. That's who he's accusing, which is the priest of the Lord. He is the high priest at the time. The Lord said unto Satan, the Lord rebuke thee, O Satan, even the Lord that hath chosen Jerusalem rebuke thee. So the one that represents Jerusalem, you are accusing, but I rebuke you. Why? Is not this a brand that I have plucked out of the fire? So he would have been consumed by the fire, but nope, I have plucked him out of the fire. And this idea of a brand being plucked out of the fire may also refer to the purification process, because I've read it before, but I'll read it again. It's in Psalm 12, verse 6. The words of the Lord are pure words, as silver is tried in a furnace of the earth, purified seven times. So this idea of the brand plucked out of the fire many times is for purification. So the Lord is saying, haven't I purified him by fire? That could be what he's saying. I'd have to study that further. Now, verse 3 of Zechariah chapter 3. It says, now Joshua was clothed with filthy garments and stood before the angel. So these filthy garments, what does it represent? It represents his words, his deeds, his actions. And so by the blood of the Lamb, his filthy garments are cleansed. And by the works that Joshua has done, the word of his testimony, or actually the testimony that he's chosen, which is Christ's testimony, he is going to be cleansed. We'll see that in verse 4. And he answered and spake unto those that stood by, saying, do what? Take away those filthy garments from him. I think this is important to understand. The gospel is not that Christ puts a pure garment over your filthy garments. No. He says, take away the filthy garments, and then he puts on the garment of righteousness. So let's see what happens here. Take away the filthy garments from him. And unto him he said, behold, I have caused those filthy garments, your iniquities, to pass from thee, and I will clothe thee with a change of raiment. So you must be naked before you're clothed. And if you're naked without being clothed, you're just, you know, completely as bad as you would be, full of iniquity. So that's why the shame of your nakedness doesn't want to be found in the book of Revelation 16. Notice what it says in verse 5. I said, let them set a fair mitre upon his head. You know that fair mitre? When you look at it in the Old Testament, it actually says, holy. There's a stamp on it, holiness to the Lord. So they set a fair mitre upon his head and clothed them with garments. What garments? It was the garments of Christ, the righteous garments. And the angel of the Lord stood by. And the angel of the Lord protested unto Joshua, and saying, thus saith the Lord of hosts, if thou wilt walk in my ways. So now we're talking about the actions that Joshua would be doing. If thou wilt walk in my ways, and if thou wilt keep my charge, then, and only then, thou shalt also judge my house, and shalt also keep my courts, and I will give thee places to walk among these that stand by. Who are these that stand by? They are the angels. And so we can see in that story of Zechariah chapter 3, an interaction between Christ and Satan and his people, Joshua representing Jerusalem, being discussed. And so the only way that Joshua was able to overcome was by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of his testimony. Now, his testimony is what lives out in his people. And so it's really not my testimony, it's Christ's testimony in me. That's what the whole justification by faith scenario is in the third angel of Revelation chapter 14, verse 12. Here is the patience of the saints. Here are they that keep the commandments of God the Father through the faith of his Son. It's not through our faith or faith in his Son. It is Christ's faith. And so it is the testimony of him that lived and died for us. That's the faith that we need. And so the word of his testimony is the one that will enable us to overcome. It's the blood of the Lamb, and it's the word of his testimony. And so I really like that scenario, how we can see and understand that we don't overcome by our own grit, our own strength, our own struggling against sin, resisting unto blood, even shedding of blood. Christ has done that for us. We need to be deader, not better. So the deader I am, the more that Christ will be living his life out in me. The less of my spirit that I follow, the more of his spirit I will follow. And so that's Christ in you, the hope of glory. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. And so I'm going to look here a little bit more at the comments that I have, because I've got a whole bunch of scriptures that are going to help us understand the idea of our lives testifying so that we can be victorious or overcoming by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of our testimony, the word of his testimony. So in Ecclesiastes 12, 13, and 14, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. And so our works will testify whether we have worked in our own strength, whether we have followed Satan, or whether we have allowed the word of his testimony to live its life out through us. So Jeremiah 25, 14, many nations and great kings shall serve themselves of them also, and I will recompense them according to their deeds. So God is going to judge nations according to their deeds and according to their works of their own hands. So a lot of what happens to us is as a result of our own doing. We have brought things upon us. Now, does God bring judgment? Does God destroy? Does God send his angel to kill? Does God do those things yet as well? Yes, absolutely yes. And I have a very long, detailed study on that at revelationwithdaniel.com if you're interested. Some people will say, well, God doesn't kill, God doesn't destroy because we bring everything upon ourselves. Well, ultimately, yeah, that's the reason why he destroys, but God does it as well. He doesn't just like leave and allow everything to happen. Like I was talking about earlier with the idea of if Christ isn't there or God isn't there, then Satan obviously steps in. With judgment, that's a different thing. You can show that from the Bible. You just look up tons of phrases that discuss that, and it seems quite clear if you're reading the Bible. So Matthew 12, 36 through 37, I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they will give account thereof in the day of judgment, right? For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. The Son of Man shall come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and he shall reward every man according to his works, right? Whether you've allowed Christ to be in you or whether you've just chosen self to be in you. That's Matthew 16, 27. Romans 14, 10 through 12. Why dost thou judge thy brother? Or why dost thou set at naught thy brother? For we shall all stand before the judgment seat of Christ. It says that clearly, every one of us. For it is written, as I live, saith the Lord, every knee shall bow to me and every tongue shall confess to God. So then, every one of us shall give account of himself to God. That's a pretty solemn statement. We're going to be doing this whether we like it or not. It's just going to happen. So the question is it Christ in you or is it me in me? For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, every one of us, that every one of us may receive the things done in his body, according to that which is done, whether it be good or whether it be bad. And so verse 2 Corinthians 11:14, no marvel, for Satan himself is converted or transformed into an angel of light. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers also be transformed as ministers of righteousness, whose end shall be according to their works. In other words, they're going to be judged by their works just like everybody else. Alexander the coppersmith, according to 2 Timothy 4:14, did me much evil. The Lord reward him according to his works. And so that was kind of like a plea that Paul was pleading for Alexander, that the Lord would reward him. I've done that too. There are some people that have just, you know, Lord, you're going to have to just do to them what they've done to me. I will kill her children, it says in Revelation 2:23, and all the churches shall know that I am he which searches the reins and hearts. I will give unto every one of you according to your works. Revelation 18:6, reward her even as she rewarded you, and double unto her double according to her works. Of course, in the cup which she hath filled, fill to her double. So Babylon's going to get a really serious judgment, because it's not only what you get because of what you've given, but she gets double. And so 20 verse 12, I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God, and the books were opened, the books of our deeds. And another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged out of those things which were written in the books, according to their works. So we can see right at the very end of time, that's what happens. The sea gave up the dead which were in it, and the death and hell delivered up the dead which were in them. And they were judged, every man, according to their works. Finally, here in verse 12, behold, I come quickly, and my reward is with me, to give every man according as his work shall be. Finally, this is the question. I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now has come salvation and strength, the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. How did he accuse them? It was because of their sins. It was because of their life. But it says they overcame Satan by the blood of the Lamb. That's how we are forgiven. That's why the filthy garments are taken away from us. And by the word of their testimony, which is Christ in you, they were able to receive the acquittal, if you will, in the judgment. And they loved not their lives unto the death. So that's the finality of the questions and comments that I have in regard to that section of the Bible and the question about overcoming. I feel as though it is all about Christ, his blood, and his life in us.